Page 3, Part 1, Political Sociology and Critique of Politics. Critical Marxism in the Frankfurt School. In introducing the political theory of the Frankfurt School, we are forced to begin with a warning. Especially in the era of political science or political sociology, the older generation of critical theorists, from Horkheimer, Marcuse, and Pollock to Kirchheimer and Neumann, formed the genuine school intellectually and institutionally only at one time, during the American period of the Zeitschrift für Sozialforschung. Before and after their position, though frequently overlapping or contiguous, were not subject to the kind of collective critical work that characterizes a school. Our aim in focusing on this period of the Frankfurt School is twofold. One, we want to depict the political origin and formative context of what is called critical theory today, as against the 1930s, when it was a code name for Marxism in general. And, two, we want to present the theory that emerged from the critical evaluation and analysis of this context. We do believe that despite the considerable variety of viewpoints, something like a unifiable theory or theoretical spectrum did emerge from the efforts of Kirchheimer, Neumann, Pollock, and Horkheimer in particular, a political theory best considered under the heading of political sociology rather than political economy. This political sociology, specifically of state-organized industrial social formations, was to provide part of the groundwork for the later and better-known social philosophy of Horkheimer, Adorno, and Marcuse, the missing complement to Adorno's cultural criticism, and the anticipation of the much later critique of politics in the works of Jürgen Habermas and Klaus Offe. Page 4. The crucible of the whole critical Marxist or Western Marxist or Hegelian Marxist enterprise was the failure of the German Revolution 1918 through 1921 and the success of the Russian Revolution 1917. The determinist, evolutionist, economistic social theory of classical social democracy, the first political heir to Marx and Engels, was discredited by the generally conservative and even nationalist behavior of most social democratic parties and unions during World War I. The Bolsheviks, who, along with other groups, split off from the Second International during these events, therefore remained unsullied by the compromise and surrender of social democracy. But they inherited the mantle of revolutionary orthodoxy, not because of their purity or even because of their superior theoretical and political line, but because of the unexpected success of radical revolution in Russia. With the exception of a few strategic but not highly theoretical departures, the Bolsheviks did not revise the world view of 19th century Marxism, and with the partial exception of Lenin's State and Revolution, did not modify but in fact put into practice the authoritarian implications of one side of that world view. On the level of philosophy, anticipating far worse things to come, Lenin himself clearly exasperated the regressive tendency of Marxist orthodoxy by moving back towards the 18th century materialism Marx already repudiated. Footnote 1. Text. As a result, no sophisticated theory was available in 1918-19 to elaborate the implication of the Russian Revolution for the more advanced countries of the West. The Marxism-Leninism that was to be forced upon all European communist parties during a period of so-called Bolshevization was even less relevant to Western Europe than the writings of the few remaining major theorists of social democracy, K. Kautsky, O. Bauer, M. Adler, and others. The historical rupture implied by the whole period of the October Revolution, and in particular the experience of Council Soviet government in Russia, Germany, Hungary, and Italy, received an adequate theoretical interpretation neither among Western social democrats who refused to recognize the importance of these events, nor among Russian Bolsheviks who in the 1920s, having already reduced the councils to organs of state administrations, were already on the way toward turning Marxism into a crude pseudo-scientific dogma of legitimation. Footnote 2, text. Page 5. The task of the theoretical reconstruction of Marxism was initially possible only at the periphery of some of the Western communist parties, and even here, not for long. The Hungarian George Lukács was eventually, after 1930, forced to completely renounce his fundamental 1923 work, History and Class Consciousness. Footnote 3. Text. The German Karl Korsch was booted out of the German Communist Party for his defense of his 1923 work, Marxism and Philosophy. Footnote 4. Text. And the Italian Antonio Gramsci was protected from the Communist International only by Mussolini's prison, where he wrote the so-called prison notebooks. Footnote 5. Text. As different as these theorists were intellectually and politically, they shared two important influences. They had been intellectually formed outside the Marxist tradition, primarily in context dominated by the revival of German idealism, and they were decisively shaped by the October Revolution and by the various council experiments in which all three had played crucial political roles. The new intellectual cast of mind helped them reconceptualize the political experience. All three theorists drew heavily on the hitherto badly known background of Marxism in German idealism to work out a theoretical posture adequate to the new historical situation. The new theory was first formulated in terms of a new philosophy, a philosophy of praxis. The term is Gramsci's, the central concept of which, praxis, alienation, hegemony, reification and mediation, footnote 5a, text, represented Marxian translations of key concepts of Kant, Fichte, Hegel, and some of their modern followers. This philosophy of praxis represents the first phase of what we would like to call critical Marxism. In retrospect, it is important to stress the lack of success of the philosophy of praxis on the level of social theory. Lukács' theory of reification suffered from this acceptance of two rather inconsistent doctrines, of Luxembourg's mechanical theory of inevitable capitalist collapse and of Lenin's voluntarist theory of organization. Korsch, plagued by an exaggerated historistic relativization of the relationship of theory and practice, contributed little to a new social theory. Gramsci, who was the most productive of the three in this area, developed a theory of state, party, and modernization more adequate to justify the de facto action of the new Bolshevik state than to comprehend the new historical realities and possibilities of Western Europe. The three major theorists of the first phase of the critical Marxist enterprise did not explicitly give up, with the possible exception of Gramsci. The 19th century theory of the more or less necessary crisis-ridden death agony of the capitalism Marx himself had analyzed. None of them could imagine anything but a socialist society in transition to communism replacing capitalism. Page 6. Ultimately, their most important contribution to a Marxian political sociology can be summed up by the key philosophical claim that the new socialist society, whatever the necessary historical tendency of the present, could be predicated only on the conscious and self-conscious actions of human subjects, who anticipated in their self-organization and intersubjective relations the structure of the future. Hence, confronted by the decline of revolutionary possibilities in the West after 1923, their explanation had to restrict itself to the crises of revolutionary subjectivity, to the ideological crises of the proletariat, Lukács, or the cultural political hegemony of the bourgeoisie, Gramsci. It is our thesis that the second phase of critical Marxism, the critical theory of the Frankfurt School, had a chance to surpass its predecessors precisely because of its insights and greater flexibility in two key areas of social theory: political sociology and theory of culture. How did these insights and this flexibility come about? For the early years of Frankfurt critical theory, we must speak of a project that, whatever its political independence and theoretical originality, belongs to the political circle drawn by the first phase of critical Marxism. A detailed comparison of the views of Horkheimer, the founder of critical theory in the 1930s, in those of Lukács and others would be out of place here, but we should indicate some major points of contact. Horkheimer from the beginning did not accept the crude scientistic epistemology of social democratic and communist orthodoxies, but this should not lead us to postulate an already implicit break with Marxism. Rather, the methods of historical materialism was used to examine its own genesis and presuppositions in the manner of Lukács and Korsch. Footnote 5b. Text. The resulting originality lay in Horkheimer's greater clarity about the transformation of capitalist society, more evident in the 1930s than earlier. The emergence of Frankfurt critical theory itself was accordingly located by Horkheimer in an epoch in which collective monopoly capital releases individual competitive capital. Footnote 6, text. Also, this claim was already deepened by allusions to key future Frankfurt School themes: the rise of the authoritarian state, the massification of culture, and the decline of the individual. Horkheimer's overall Marxist orthodoxy was not yet in doubt. The ultimate object and terrain of the critical enterprise remained political economy and the primacy of economic determination was insisted on even in contexts where Lukács himself was far more flexible, for example in the case of social formations where kinship systems played the major organizing role. Footnote 7. Text. Whereas Lukács restricted the primacy of the economic to the capitalist social formation, the early Horkheimer, in this sense more orthodox, was able to follow Lukács only when ascribing a functional primacy to politics in the period of transition to socialism and under socialism itself. Footnote 8. Text. Page 7. It is true that Horkheimer was never mechanically protectionistic vis-a-vis politics and culture. One might say that he gets maximum mileage from Engels' famous letters and historical material.